So we have some iOS 18 rumors that we haven't really talked about much in the past few weeks. We've just had so much other news. The first one actually came out yesterday, and it says something about a new Safari browser assistant feature coming in iOS 18. That's pretty much all the rumor says, is some feature called Safari Browsing Assistant.
Yeah, because this was found in like a, you know, code reference, basically. They just had the name of the feature and nothing surrounding it.
My first interpretation of it was basically like a Copilot style feature built right into Safari, where it can help you like summarize web pages. You can ask questions and it'll scan the web page for the answer. Was that your read on it too?
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because we're only thinking that because of the other rumors that iOS 18 is AI infused, right? Like you go back 3 years and you say the Safari is going to have a browsing assistant. You might think of like tab groups or something. Do you know what I mean? Like it's just like a completely different context. But these days, if you think about an assistant in the context of browsing, you do kind of feel like the, you know, like what Microsoft do in Edge now, where you can have the Bing Copilot thing pop up on the side. You can ask it to summarize the web page you're looking at. You can get some more information about it. You know, like contextual Siri, but for browsing, and with no other shreds of evidence to go on, that has to be the default suggestion here, right? I mean, maybe it could be more like what the Arc browser search thing does, where it like summarizes, like you do a search term and then it like summarizes from a bunch of tabs. That's also a kind of browsing assistant, right? In a slightly different way, but it's just whether you're talking about, you know, you navigate to a web page and then you get an assistant for the web page, or whether you're talking to the assistant to do the search for you. I guess it's like a different way in on the same problem. The Arc search app thing annoys me because they turn all the ads off. Like, so A, they put in the intermediary screen where it summarizes the website for you, but then if you do go to the sources, it has ad blockers all over it, which never feels like a great trade-off in terms of business, right? Like,
yeah, we have some opinions about Arc.
But some feature like that, but done a bit more ethically, I think would be interesting. Like, I mean, Google basically does the summarizing now, right? Even without AI, half the time you just get the answer in the little square box and we all just kind of live with it. So that can continue on. Like, I think it'd be kind of cool if you could ask, like, you know, assistant, I want to buy some product, show me some reviews, and it could just like open up four tabs worth of reviews for you, right? And like organize and maybe give you a little summary, and then you could like tab and read the whole thing. So like that's something where I think Apple will be more thoughtful in terms of the hallucination problem, where their AI stuff will, I hope, and I kind of think they are going this direction, where it might give you like the summary, but then they'll have like, here's the four sources directly below, and the tabs are open for you, so you can then read it yourself. Like that's the kind of direction I think they're going to go in, and that would line up with the quote-unquote Safari browsing assistant style feature as well.
Yeah, because I don't like a lot of what Arc does when it comes to scraping web pages and kind of removing all of the context from what's on that web page. But I think Apple has shown, you know, with their rumor talks to properly license content from news publishers, they know that they can't get away with some of the things that a company like Arc can get away with.
Yeah, the startup has some immunity by the fact that they're small, right? And also, they're not heavily financed. Companies like Apple have a massive legal target on their back, even for day-to-day operations. So if they try and do anything that's slightly off the company, you know, the straight and narrow, they're going to get sued to high heaven. So that is always a factor here. And sometimes that becomes at a cost, right? Where bigger companies act more conservative than smaller companies do because smaller companies feel like they've got the headroom to be more agile. But in these cases, I think it's generally good. Not just good for the, you know, the future of the business. It's also good from user experience perspectives in terms of these LLMs do get stuff wrong, or they get stuff, you know, they mix their messaging or they just make up stuff. So having the hard-backed sourcing behind it is a better way to go about it. Like, it's kind of the difference between, you know, finding product reviews and it just gives you a paragraph versus opening the four tabs of product reviews, right? So you can kind of skip the Google search step, but you're still actually going to the websites.
Even OpenAI, which is by no means a small company, has gotten away with more than Apple or Google or anybody else could get away with. They've been flying by the seat of their pants.
And today, anything OpenAI introduces is under way more scrutiny, right? Like, The initial iteration of ChatGPT was them doing whatever they wanted, scraping from who knows where. future versions of that, you know, they're now under pressure and they're in the spotlight. It's come up a lot for their audio model when they just announced, and their Sora video model. Like, there's a lot of inspection, interrogation about, you know, how exactly did they train a visual model? Using, you know, using correctly licensed content when YouTube says they haven't done a partnership with them and they don't let them crawl stuff. And if you actually look at the actual web, 90% of video on the web is from YouTube. So I don't really know how you do it without that. But that's an ongoing controversy in a slightly adjacent situation.
That actually ties into something I don't think we talked about, where Apple has licensed, what was it, millions of images from Shutterstock?
Yeah, Shutterstock. Yeah.
$25 million to $50 million deal to train their AI models.
And last year there was one where Apple was talking to news publishers, right, about getting data from, that was reported from the New York Times and stuff, and that was like $50 million a year kind of range. So they're obviously ingesting as much data as they can, whether that, you know, directly transpires to end products remains to be clear. Like, a lot of this, they just need the data just to do research before you even think about productizing the stuff. What was the other feature for Safari that we saw?
There was something referenced called encrypted visual search. I don't know if that was specifically tied to Safari or really what it means, because you already have visual search in a few different spots, like throughout iOS, in the Photos app and in Spotlight.
Yeah, you have, they call it like lookup, right?
Lookup, like, yeah.
Yeah,
I think, is that the thing that can like recognize now, like the symbols on your car's dashboard if it breaks down? Yeah.
Yeah, or like if you take a picture of a plant, you can like click on the little eye and it will like tell you the genus of the plant and stuff like that. And that's actually an interesting model, because the way that works is you browse through your photo library and you just scroll through, and then you know where like the little eye symbol like either has like sparkles around it, or I think on 17 it now just shows like a dog icon if it's an animal, right? Yeah. So that identification of like the category is done entirely on device and offline. So it will like look at the photo and be like, okay, we see there's an animal in here, because the on device model can recognize it's an animal. So it puts the animal icon, and then only when you click on the animal icon to open lookup does it then take your photo and send it to a web server to actually do the identification. So that's how they kind of get around the privacy element of that right now. I have to assume it's already to some degree encrypted, right? Like it can't be fully encrypted, because otherwise they couldn't see the photo on the other end and figure it out. So yeah, that might be something slightly adjacent. I mean, if you're just thinking of the industry at the moment, like the Google Pixel phones on Android, and obviously that's on like Samsung and stuff too, they have that circle to search feature thing where basically whatever you're looking at on the screen, you can like circle it and it will do a visual lookup based on what you've circled. So not just like a photo you've taken, but anything that you're doing. So maybe that's what this encrypted visual search thing blends into. We'll have to see. Obviously, when you just have three words, you don't really know what it's about.
And initially, this rumor too speculated that it was tied to iCloud Private Relay, because basically to protect the IP address of the user from being seen by Apple. Then the source followed up and said it's not actually iCloud Private Relay, but rather just an oblivious HTTP gateway thing. The iCloud Private Relay thing, that obviously brought up the question if features like this will be tied behind iCloud Plus, because iCloud Private Relay is only for paying iCloud subscribers. What do you think in terms of monetization? We have to pay?
I can't imagine that Apple will introduce all this AI stuff and it will be free. It just seems unrealistic, because some of it costs a lot to run on the server side. I mean, you look at Google Gemini Advanced or whatever, that's $20 a month. ChatGPT Plus is $20 a month. Obviously, they also have free tiers, right? So the question is, where does Apple come down on which stuff is included as part of your quote-unquote device features and what's also part of a service? And we just don't know yet how they're going to land there. I presume some stuff will be free and some stuff will be requiring a subscription. Probably not. Like, so far, we haven't seen anything where I'm like, Apple's going to charge you like just standalone for blah. But it might be rolled into like iCloud Plus or part of, you know, Apple One or something. But again, it's still kind of nebulous about what they're actually going to ship. Like, we know they're shipping AI stuff, but we don't know how much of that is just purely going to be on-device models, in which case Apple will struggle to justify charging for any of that because it's just running on your CPU, which you've already paid for as part of your phone. But if like Gemini, the Google Gemini integration is like really centered on it, then maybe they're going to charge for that. I mean, it wouldn't be out of my headspace that they charge for like a Siri Plus. If you want good Siri, you have to pay for it. Like, obviously that's not ideal, but these models, these big LLMs, have to run on backends that cost a lot of money. So, and Apple doesn't like losing money. So I could see it happen. I'm certainly heading into WWDC not thinking that every single thing they announce will just be a free OS feature. Some of it's going to have some sort of monetization backing behind it.
Another iOS 18 rumor is Apple Maps custom route creation. So this, again, was based on some backend code changes that Apple made. My initial interpretation of this was, what is different with this compared to just putting multiple stops along a route in Apple Maps?
It's like saving it for later, isn't it? Like,
sort of. So Google has custom route creation on the web. So I went and played with it last week, and basically you put in your starting destination or your starting spot and your final destination, and it plots the two points on the map. But then you can go in and have like super fine grained control over what route you take to get there, down to like choosing which streets you take, which turns you take. So if you know that there's like a scenic route that you want to take to get from point A to point B, you can specifically kind of map that out using Google Maps route creation, then save that exact route and use it on Google Maps on your phone.
Right. So you can like tweak the route and then you can retrieve it later on the mobile device.
Because right now in Apple Maps or Google Maps, you can input point A, point B, and it'll give you like a couple different route options, you know, to get there. But you might know a better route, or you might know something that you heard somebody else say is a better route, but Google Maps or Apple Maps doesn't present that as an option.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, this is definitely, I think Apple Maps, you know, they've shown that they will meet feature parity with Google Maps over time. And this is like one of those niche features that in a year like this where, you know, Mark Gurman keeps repeating that even outside of AI stuff, this is going to be a big OS update. So yeah, seems like a perfect time to introduce this kind of thing.
Especially if they can bring it to Apple Maps on the phone, because Google Maps' implementation is only on the web. And when I was playing with it, there's like user interface elements that if you used Google Maps 10 years ago, you'd recognize because they haven't updated it.
It's just a really old feature, yeah. Because you can't imagine it's like used by that many people. It's like a niche
Not at
thing.
All, no.
Yeah.
But I was thinking this week that I have basically 8 days of not having a house or anywhere to go at the end of May because of our move to Baltimore. We have to be out of our house in Waco, and then our lease in Baltimore doesn't start for 8 days, and all of our stuff is being driven across the country by a moving company. So I was thinking about this custom route creation thing, and I was like, I could just go in and like make a super fine detailed route to get from Waco to Baltimore and take some detours along the way and just have that all saved to my phone and know that it's there to keep me on track. It was an interesting real world thought about how you could use this, especially again if it's just an Apple Maps on the phone.
Yeah, because they do have that you can make those guides, right, which are like collections of places, but you're not like routing between them. It's just like a bookmarks folder that you can share with other
pretty
people
much, yeah.
Yeah, so that's cool, yeah.
Also, for the record, we talked about the Apple Maps EV routing feature and how on the Mac you can tick a checkbox that says assume 100% charge at the start of the route. And you were appalled at the thought that it was something that was only on the Mac and not on the iPhone. It is still not on the iPhone. And you thought I was crazy for saying that it wasn't on the iPhone. And it's still not there. I haven't heard anybody correct me on that. I've been using it all the time. Still not there. So I literally have to break out my Mac to do proper route planning for an electric car.
That is insane.
Very insane. And it's quite annoying. So I'm going to be like driving down the road to Baltimore and have to get my Mac out on the side of the road to update my route or something.
Yeah, Apple Maps has come a long way, but there are definitely some weird places where, and to be fair to them, they do keep investing in it and they keep moving forward.
Oh, yeah.
Like the big thing with Apple Maps is it costs them a lot to do. Like, you know, they have people on the ground, they have all the ground truth, they have the constant map features. Like, it's not, it's of all their like free services, it's one of the ones that probably cost them the most to maintain. And so far, they haven't really monetized it at all. I'm still waiting for, you know, ads in the search results or something to pop up. Yeah, but so far, nothing. Happy Hour this week is brought to you by Shopify. Check them out at shopify.com/happyhour. So if you're thinking of starting a business or you already have a small business, are you using Shopify? And if not, why not? Shopify helps you sell everywhere and you don't need coding knowledge to get started. They have a bunch of free website templates that can get you up and running, and they'll handle payments, secure transactions, and shipping. The Shopify platform runs on servers in their cloud, so you don't have to think about managing services or hosting or anything complicated. You just focus on doing what you do best. And as you get bigger, Shopify is there with all the tools, knobs, and dials to tune your e-commerce site to your needs. Shopify is there for you when you're just starting out, selling your first products online, and grows with you, even if you launch in retail and hit success with millions of orders. Whether you're selling security systems, PC components, or maybe you're a Mac developer wanting to sell directly to your users, Shopify is the answer. They have all-in-one commerce and in-person point-of-sale solutions that can work seamlessly together. I've sold stuff as an indie dev before online and done it all by hand. And even though I had the know-how, it was so much work and hassle that on reflection really wasn't worth it. Whereas what I love about Shopify is that it's so simple and it has everything you need in one place. So if you do hit the jackpot and get big, you aren't stranded waiting for a dev team to build out the functionality. Shopify just has it there ready for you. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States with global reach, supporting millions of entrepreneurs across 175 countries. And that's because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/happyhour, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/happyhour now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/happyhour. Thanks to Shopify for sponsoring the show.
So one of the things about Vision Pro is that it has all of the cameras around the bottom, around the front. But one of the things Apple has done is restricted access of those camera feeds from third-party developers. Instead, what Apple does is they give developers access to what they call surroundings data, which is built around this three-dimensional model that uses a combination of camera data and LiDAR data to map the area around you. And then it can pass that information along to third-party developers. The Information had a report this week, though, that said at least some developers find it really limiting that they can't access the pure camera feeds. So there was one developer cited in the report. He makes HitMotion, which is apparently a popular fitness game on the Meta Quest. And he wants full access to the Vision Pro's camera so he can build a version of HitMotion for the Vision Pro that lets users interact with real-world objects, like the example given is a punching bag. The other example is from a developer who builds apps for older adults and people with disabilities, and he says he wants to make an app where it can give people with limited vision a description of their surroundings, then also act as a virtual cane that can warn them when they're approaching obstacles.
Which this, the iPhone, like Apple offers through the iPhone Magnifier app, right? It will like alert you to nearby obstacles and stuff as you're walking around. Yeah. Which I don't think they released on the Vision Pro yet. Like, I don't think that's part of the initial accessibility stuff on Vision Pro OS 1.
This kind of, I think what the Information was trying to do was play into the narrative that there's no apps for Vision Pro, developers aren't interested, but I don't think
the saw it as a kind of slight on the Apple's being monopolistic and controlling and not letting third-party developers compete kind of angle. There's some of that, but there is genuine privacy issues at play here. And I think it's definitely not a long-term sustainable equilibrium to be like, you're never getting camera sensor access, right? Like, this is it. Have fun. And what you get basically right now is a 3D model of the environment based on the like LiDAR scanner and stuff. And so you get like the meshes of the room. And so you can be like, I want to put something on this wall. I want to put something on this table. But if there was like a magazine on the table, your app couldn't see it and recognize it and work figure out what it is, right? So if you want to do like a, you know, visual identification with an LLM and be like, you know, what am I looking at? A third-party app has no access to that right now. It doesn't have access to the raw like RGB data of the camera. You're just basically getting rough room meshes and not even specific enough so that if you had like a toy, like say if you had a game where you were kind of doing like an augmented reality experience combined with a toy, you can't really like, you can't see like the tracking markers on an object or anything like that. Like, it's just not available right now. And that would be kind of an insane limitation if it lasted forever. But I think it's something where you can see how they start with nothing and then they slowly unfurl and give more access over time. And not necessarily just like, well, now you have a permissions dialogue and you just get access to the camera feed, although that may happen eventually. You can also see how there might be like intermediary steps where they can open up different ways to give developers what they need to do without giving them a portal into their vision of their house, you know? Yeah. In the information article, it talks about like a text description API, which Apple is apparently like wants to work on, but it just wasn't ready to ship at the beginning. And so maybe that's something that comes around like Vision OS 2 or something, where basically instead of getting, you know, images from the camera sensors, you'd get like a very detailed textual description of everything that the Vision Pro can see, and then the app could respond to that, and maybe all of the like labels are annotated with locations so it can put stuff directly in space and stuff. So there's a path here to open up more, but it is very true that, that this is the thing that gets me. Like before the Vision Pro came out, there was so many demos of people just doing mock-ups and stuff, or it's like there was that one where people were changing or like doing the classic, you know, you're looking at someone's face and it looks them up in their contacts and tells you what their name is. Like,
yeah,
that demo is just not possible on the Vision Pro today, right? Whether you think it's good or bad, it's just complete work of fiction because you can't get access to the imagery. So over time, I think that stuff will be loosened.
I just don't necessarily foresee a world in which Apple gives a developer just unfettered access to the camera feeds. That's even when Vision Pro...
I mean, they do on the iPhone.
The iPhone's different, though. I mean, I think anyway.
Kind of. Right, like you do take your iPhone everywhere with you, and you can press, you know, if you get two dialogues, one for camera, one for location, you're getting basically the same information as what you get out of a Vision Pro headset, right? So,
but when an app is using your camera on the iPhone, you're also keenly aware that they're doing that because you're looking through the camera feed because the camera is open. On Vision Pro, you're always...
That's not necessarily true, right? You can... then an app on the phone could have access... if you grant access to the camera, it can get the camera feed without showing it to you. So
really?
Only indication you would have is the little, like, green icon, dot in the notch area. In practical speaking, most apps that are using the camera show you the camera, but it isn't necessarily a requirement. And there's been plenty of mishandling of location in previous years on the iPhone 2. So they're definitely learning from a previous platform's mistakes, right? But you can't say it's like completely unprecedented, because if you grant, let's just choose Facebook, you know, if you grant them location and photos access because you want to take pictures and share them, you're getting, say, the same access to the phone as you are with the headset, I would say.
I think just the issue with the information report and this story in general is how it attempts to play into the narrative that there's no Vision Pro apps when... again, the limitations on the camera feed, I don't think, are the biggest hindrance for developers to make a Vision Pro app right now.
I would completely agree with that. The biggest hindrance to people making Vision Pro apps is the number of Vision Pros sold. Not by far. That's number one problem. And that ain't changing anytime soon.
One thing I did want to say in follow-up to our conversation about Vision Pro content last week, I was listening back to the episode. It was at the very beginning of the episode, and we talked about the MLS video, the MLB app for watching baseball. And I think it came across a little bit too harsh, maybe, especially in regards to the Vision Pro or the MLB app on Vision Pro. Because the thing about the immersiveness in the MLB app is that it's great when it works. It's a great proof of concept about what's to come. But when you put aside all of those bells and whistles and just talk about watching a baseball game on what's effectively like a 100-foot screen in front of you, that experience is still fantastic. And that's still... for all of the faults of the Vision Pro content experience, that is still one of the best features of the platform. I just realized we didn't really point that out. We more talked about the limitations and what's not there and kind of glossed over what is there. And having watched a few more baseball games wearing Vision Pro, it's still just such a great experience. And I think I came across a little too negative last week.
Yeah, I mean, you're the Vision Pro believer. You're using... you're like...
oh, yeah.
The person I know that uses it literally every day, right? Like, you're the...
every day, yeah.
You're the leading force on that, so I wasn't doubting your commitment at all, but I think you probably watch more baseball games on the Vision Pro than you do on a TV, right?
Yeah, almost every night. Some nights I'll watch on TV just because I'm, like, doing other things. Like, the idea of wearing Vision Pro and watching baseball on Vision Pro while I'm doing the dishes is not at all appealing to me. Yeah. I know some people have talked about that being a use case, but... the weight of Vision Pro and kind of the idea of, I don't know, doing dishes is kind of gross. You have water around you and it just doesn't... that's not a pleasant experience for me. But if I'm just chilling, sitting on the couch, maybe doing a couple things around the house, absolutely. Baseball on Vision Pro all day long. Apple also has some changes to the App Store guidelines there are basically two things here. The rule changes finally acknowledge the ongoing ruling, settlement, whatever you want to call it, with Spotify and the European Union. In particular, developers in the European Union can now add a buy button that takes users to their website to pay for a service, like in Spotify's case, a button to take them to Spotify.com to subscribe and pay. Basically exactly what we expected in that regard, I think.
Yeah, it's the direct fallout of the lawsuit, the EU Commission investigation result, where they fined Apple $2 billion and they said they can't do this anymore. And so,
do we know if Apple's proposed changes are enough to satisfy the ruling?
The doubt's in the air, but my reading of it seems like it should. Let's put it that way. I don't think there's anything obvious where it's like, this is going against the spirit of the rules. I'm sure the EU's still investigating it. They haven't, you know, like everything the EU does, they're not saying one way or the other just yet. But I couldn't, it's not like there's a secret 50 cent fee every time you click on the link. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah.
You're giving links, you can say what you want, as long as you're a music streaming app in the EU region, which covers the EU complaint on music streaming.
Oh yeah, it's just music streaming. That's just right.
Just music streaming, yeah. So, well, I'm sure there'll be exactly the same court case over a different category of apps in the not too distant future. But right now, music streaming is the specific exception when you can get the entitlement to do this in the EU regions only.
The other change, which is a bigger change probably, and it applies worldwide, so not just in the European Union, game emulators are now permitted in the App Store.
Maybe.
So historically, So historically, Apple has prohibited game emulators altogether. Now Apple says they're allowed, but the developer of the game emulator app is responsible for all of the potential legal implications of a game emulator app and offering games via that app.
And it's so not... My question mark is, are you allowed to make a game emulator that doesn't have any games in it and can only has like an import button so you can import from a file? So you can basically get your game in from somewhere else.
Which that's how most game emulating apps work now. They don't offer any games themselves. You import the file.
The big doubt here is because the rule in the guidelines is 4.7, which is part of the same group of rules about mini apps, mini games, streaming games, and chatbots and plugins. Yeah. And now it's and game emulators. So it's not like... what this definitely allows for is, for instance, like Nintendo could make Pokemon Virtual Console where they take all the GBA Pokemon games, ship them inside the app binary, and the code isn't running natively. It's being emulated to play the game, but that's presented to the user and they can play, you know, Pokemon from the GBA era and have a great time with it. That is now explicitly allowed. A similar option is like the Sega Genesis Classics Collection, right? Like, that's now explicitly allowed. What was blocked before, when people tried to submit to the App Store, they get rejected, is like a straight up emulator. But in that time frame, i.e. previously, emulators were not mentioned in the App Store rules at all. So it was like we don't know if it's allowed or not. And the App Store rejected it and it was denied. Now there is a specific acknowledgement that game emulators are a category and they are allowed in the App Store, ensuring that any software included inside the app applies with guidelines and all applicable laws. What it doesn't spell out is whether you can have a game emulator that doesn't do anything and has an import button, right? Doesn't say one way or the other. So maybe that's still not allowed.
But what would be the reasoning for that not being allowed if Apple is saying that all of the legal liability falls on the developer themselves?
Well, it wasn't not allowed before.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the problem, right? Like, it was never explicitly denied before. It's not like it said you're not allowed to make a game emulator in the App Store review guidelines, and now the App Store review guidelines have taken that sentence out. So it's still a bit of a gray area. I think if you read the rules, seems like it should be allowed. But what app review approves and not approves doesn't map one-to-one with a reading of the letter of the guidelines on the website. Yeah. So we're kind of still waiting for someone to try. And this does seem a bit like a direct response to, Riley Tester making Delta in the alt store in the EU. And like Apple's kind of situating like, well, you know, we could let this third party app store gain some footholding because people want to play emulator games, or we could just let the game emulator exist in the app store. So that's kind of where I saw it originally. And I was like, oh, I was pretty gung-ho about it. I was like, okay, yeah, this is what they're doing. They're just cutting off, they're quote unquote competing.
Wow.
But if you want to be pessimistic, it doesn't explicitly spell that out. So I would still call it a bit murky. We don't know yet. Hopefully it does mean that's the case, just like it does mean for game streaming, right?
Right.
But we don't know yet.
Because Apple has every incentive to disincentivize somebody from going out and downloading an alternative app marketplace or an app from a developer's website instead of just having them stay committed to the App Store ecosystem itself, right? Like you said, this is sort of a direct response to Apple saying, okay, why should we show users what life is like outside of the App Store when we could just kind of relax the App Store guidelines and let them do this one thing via the App Store?
Yeah, take the five biggest reasons why someone wants to download an alternative App Store and just support three of them. And then you immediately make the health of a third-party App Store way less. So yes, you allow them to exist, but why would people use them when they can just get the apps they want from the main App Store? And there is nothing illegal or illicit about a game emulator. It's just the games that you load on it, right? Which
right.
I would argue is no different than allowing Plex in the App Store, right? Because you can use Plex in a perfectly legal and legitimate way, or you can use Plex in the way that most people do use it, but Apple lets Plex be in the App Store. So the game emulator situation is equivalent.
You can use the Files app to import pirated content and just watch it in the Files app on your phone. It's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Because in terms of like the top five reasons somebody would switch to an alternative app marketplace or venture outside the App Store in general, I'd say game emulating is probably like number one, number two, because I struggled.
Fortnite,
yeah.
Like, I think Fortnite is going to be the number one.
Probably.
Because it's just a very popular game and Apple doesn't allow it in the store. And I'm still kind of not 100% convinced that they won't make a deal at some point and let them come back to the App Store. But at least
Apple
for now.
And Epic Games?
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like the whole Tim Sweeney versus Phil Schiller email exchange might have ruined any hope of that happening.
Maybe. We'll see. It just seems like, would Apple rather let the Epic Games alternative App Store get foothold? Or would they just let Fortnite back in the App Store? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If I'm the strategy man, I'm like, seems easy. It seems better for us if we just let the game that people want to play in rather than let an alternative App Store gain market share. But we're going to have to see on that. So yeah, game emulators, I hope it's supported because it was kind of arbitrary that it wasn't. But it doesn't specifically explicitly spell that out. So we're still kind of waiting.
If Apple said, okay, Epic Games, you can come back to the App Store, I honestly don't think Epic Games would take them up on that offer because all of the problems they had with the App Store still exist for the most part, especially if they wanted it to be available worldwide.
Yeah.
There's
roadblocks for sure, but I wouldn't rule it out. The other thing, by the way, just to point out is this wouldn't allow for a JIT, which would allow for higher performance, and therefore you still wouldn't be able to emulate newer games. So basically like
right.
PlayStation 3 and onwards, I'd say, right? Like that kind of generation or off the menu. But anything older, especially with the handheld games like DS, GBA and everything, that'd be fine for the iPhone CPU to emulate without a JIT compilation. Right now, JIT compilation is only allowed for alternative browser engines running in the EU. Otherwise, it's completely denied because there are security implications to it. So, but I'm not like sitting here being like, well, the game emulator, you know, it's not a prerequisite. Like, allow game emulators in the store even if you're not allowing a JIT because there's loads of handheld games that people would love to run on their phone that right now they can't. Happy Hour this week is also brought to you by Fast Growing Trees. Sign up at fastgrowingtrees.com and use promo code HAPPYHOUR to get 15% off. Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the US with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. Now, Chance, I know you have some trees from Fast Growing Trees, right?
Mm-hmm. So they sent me the braided Madagascar dragon tree. And every year, Emily and I say we're going to get some nice plants and decorations, but we never actually really have followed through on that. Just because in general, it's an overwhelming process with multiple trips to a nursery or multiple nurseries if they don't have what you're looking for. And Fast Growing Trees solves all of that. So we were placing our Fast Growing Trees order online. And right off the bat, we noticed just how many personalized options they have from every different category of tree you could want, indoor, outdoor, all of the good stuff. We picked the braided Madagascar dragon tree because it can be put indoors, clicked a few buttons, and then it showed up on our doorstep. And I've mentioned a few times that we're moving, and I think we're probably going to utilize fast-growing trees to get some new decorations for our new place. That's how good of an experience it is. Personalization, so many options. Fast-growing trees really does have something for everyone, something for every environment, and for every style.
And with fast-growing trees, you don't need the hassle to drive around to nurseries, big gardening centers, waiting in long lines, and then worrying about how you're going to load up all these big plants in your car. Fast-growing trees makes it super easy to order online, and your plants are shipped to your door in just 1 to 2 days. And even if you don't have a lot of yard space, you can spruce up your indoors by growing things like lemon, avocado, olive, and fig trees inside your home. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show can get an additional 15% off their first purchase when they're using the code HAPPYHOUR at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowntrees.com using the code HAPPYHOUR at checkout. That's fastgrowntrees.com, promo code HAPPYHOUR. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Thanks to Fast Growing Trees for sponsoring the show.
iOS 17.5 has a few smaller changes that we've talked about, but buried in the Apple News app is a new game called Quartiles, I think is how you would say it. Quartiles, Quartiles. It's basically a word game that continues Apple's attempts to take on the New York Times and offer as many games as possible. The basic gist of Quartiles is you start with 20 tiles in a grid, and you combine them to form words of 1, 2, 3, or 4 tiles. You're looking to score as many points as possible, find all five-letter tiles to earn 80 points. It's basically your classic word game, sort of like Scrabble, sort of like Connections from the New York Times. The game itself is fun. It's hard. It's the type of game that I very much struggle with. But I think one of the more interesting aspects of this news is the fact that this new game was in iOS 17.5 and nobody noticed it for like a week and a half. Because it's so hard to get to the puzzles section of the Apple News app.
Yep. I'll tell you why it's so hard for me to get access to the puzzle section in the News app, because it's not there at all.
Because it's limited to Apple News Plus. Apple News Plus is US, UK, Australia, and Canada. But Apple News Plus puzzles are even more limited. Just the US and I think Canada, but no place that uses different forms of English. Like you.
But yeah, assuming you can access it, you have to go to what? You have to go to like following and then scroll down and find the puzzles section, like in the channels list.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a pain. I don't know what the problem with this is, like, where, like, some people are going to love the puzzles, some people are going to never use the puzzles. So is it worth warranting a tab slot for puzzles?
I use puzzles a lot more than I use audio or sports.
Fair.
Especially now that there's an Apple Sports app.
Do you know what I miss? I miss the days when the Apple apps would let you customize the tab bar.
Yep.
And they'd have that little more button, and then you could click more, and then you click edit, and you could just drag in like from like 20 different options what things you wanted in the tab bar. That was a big deal in the early iPhone years, but it's kind of fallen to the wayside, and I don't think any Apple app lets you do it these days, but this is a good example where it would be kind of useful. Or even if you just like pin them so they appear in like a top... Like, you know, in the App Store, like when you have that kind of horizontally scrolling like list of little icons, like little categories, like arcade and da-da-da, they have like that little list. I kind of feel like that's what they kind of need for their other apps, like TV and news. So you could like pin them. So when you're on the home tab at the very top, it would just have the little pin sections of stuff that you know that you go to a lot of the time. So you could just tap it directly from there. So it's right above the fold, right at the beginning. So you could put puzzles there if you like puzzles, and if you don't like puzzles, you don't have to. But yeah, it does have a discoverability problem as it stands. The other thing they've done in 17.5 is now both the crosswords and the quartile game integrates with Game Center.
So yeah, which is nice.
Get high scores through Game Center, which is in its own kind of weird development purgatory where it doesn't have a dedicated app icon. It's kind of integrated in settings, like it's kind of the backbone of App Store of Apple Arcade gameplay with multiplayer, but not really, and doesn't have like a dedicated spot for it. So Game Center's in different levels of disrepair and lack of care for many years, and I guess this is a positive in the fact that the Apple Members Gaming Center exists. And they're like, well, we're going to use it here. But a more overall strategy for Game Center would be nice. Because right now it feels very weird how, like, the way you manage your Game Center friends is only in settings. It's, like, bizarre.
Because the New York Times Games app, at least for the crosswords, has, like, a leaderboard feature. And me and Emily do the crossword mini every day. It's, like, the first thing we do when we wake up. And we race to do it and see who beats each other. Who wins, and we can see each other's scores on the leaderboard. We haven't really gotten into the habit of doing the Apple News Plus crosswords yet, just because there isn't that competitive aspect to it. So I told Emily about this, and she was like, well, I have to start doing the Apple News Plus crosswords so I can beat you on those, too. Great. But it really does underscore Apple seeing how successful games have been for the New York Times and saying, why don't we take a piece of that to grow Apple News Plus? Because there's data basically showing that the games subscription offered by the New York Times is its biggest driver of revenue growth, and how much more time people spend playing the New York Times games than they actually spend reading the New York Times. So for a kind of Apple's weakest service is offering is Apple News Plus. The best way to get people to pay up either separately for Apple News Plus or for an Apple One bundle that includes Apple News Plus is offer some good games. All it takes is for one of these games to go mega viral, like Wordle did, like Connections, and you're going to get a lot of people to pay up just to take part in the trend.
Yeah, and economically, it's like the cheapest thing they can offer in the news app, right? Because everything else you look at, they have to share the revenue with the person that's written it. Whereas, you know, you can pay like a very small number of people to craft a load of puzzles for the entire year, and then you just make free money off everyone that's using them because you're not paying per subscriber fees or anything.
Although if they really wanted to take off, they should probably expand it outside of North America.
And have some sort of free option, right? Because that's how Wordle took off, because it was free.
And it's still free.
And it's Liz free. Yeah.
Have you played I don't know if it was in the Plus show or the main show, the New York Times, their new game, The Strands. Have you been playing that every day?
Yeah, you told me about that, right? And we've been on it. I got them all yesterday with no hints at all. I was very happy.
I told Emily how excited you were the first time you got it with no hints. And she was like, cool, but she gets it with no hints like every day. And I was like, well, for some of us, it's a big deal.
After I've ramped up, I've got a lot more with no hints at all, but it takes a few goes to get the wiring in, you know.
It's still not as hard as Connections, though. I hate Connections, and everybody hates Connections, so take solace in that fact. Even Emily can't do it. And finally, our weekly check-in on iPads. So I think
my iPad Pro.
Yeah. I think last week we talked about, Mark Gurman said, sometime in May. Now he says the week of May 6th. So that's the first full week of May. Still expected just to be a press release. He also suggests iPad Pro will be more expensive, as we've heard from a few other sources. Then in iPadOS 17.5, the first beta, 9to5 Mac, we found some references to the new iPad Pro hardware, specifically confirming the new display technology. OLED screens across the board. Kind of just more of the same here. They're coming. We thought they were coming in March. We thought they were coming in April. Now it looks like May 6th will be the day.
Yeah, Mark Gurman saying price increases is like the most reliable sourcing on that we've had, because the rest of it's been like a bit murky, right? Or just like, you know, like Digitimes or something, which aren't the best for reliability on that stuff. And Gurman's obviously better than that. He doesn't say how much more expensive they're going to get. I can't imagine they're going to get like, I know, a year ago or whatever, it was like, they're going to be $1,500 time price. I'm like, nah. You know, $100 more, $200 more.
Digitimes has said $160-ish.
Yeah, that's where I would expect. Right now, the 11-inch is $799. It's not going to be more than $999 starting price. That'd be insane. So, like, I'd be shocked if it's more than $899, but we'll find out.
Because we've said this a million times, but the value proposition of an iPad Pro with a Magic Keyboard, maybe toss in an Apple Pencil, compared to now you can get an M2 redesign, the new design MacBook Air for $999, that's just a tough sell, a very tough sell.
Yeah, the numbers don't add up there when you compare them.
I think the last time I mentioned that, maybe the redesigned MacBook Air wasn't at the $999 price point, but now that it is, even harder. It's just, I couldn't recommend that to somebody in good conscience, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Matt, so the 11-inch iPad Pro right now is $799. If that was $999, it's like, why would you ever pick that compared to the Air? But I mean, iPads are different, so like, you know, you can't just go straight across by pricing, but
yeah,
it is a factor, right? Like, in terms of the overall appeal of the product category, it's like, you got to really love an iPad to pick an 11-inch screen which doesn't have the keyboard or anything attached to it for the same price as the, you know, 13-inch M2 MacBook Air. So I can't imagine it'd be a $999. It will probably be $899, and then when you do include the $300 right. keyboard case, it will still be more expensive than the laptop, but that's kind of how it is already.
And it's not unlikely that the new Magic Keyboard will be more expensive than the existing Magic Keyboard, so.
Certainly possible.
Yep, fun times.
The Magic Keyboard and the Apple Pencil are just way overpriced for what they are.
How much is the Apple Pencil now? It's $129.
$129.
Because they raised it when they redesigned it in 2018, right? Because it was
$99. Yeah, the first gen was $99.
Yeah.
Second gen, $129, and the price has never come down. And the USB-C one is $79, I think.
Yes. And then the Lightning one is still a product in the lineup for $69, I guess.
No, $99.
The one with Lightning is $99 still?
Yeah, they didn't change the price on it.
Oh, my God. Oh.
And so the Lightning Apple Pencil first generation, which came out in 2015, yeah?
Yeah.
$99. 10 years later, and now completely outdated, it's still sold for $99.
And it works with one iPad that Apple sells today, and that iPad mm-hmm. costs, what, $300, $329?
Yep, $350, something like that, yep.
What a bargain. We should do the Benjamin Mayo iPad check-in. Where are you feeling? Are you still considering it, or lost interest by now?
I'm not super feeling it. I still just struggle with what am I going to do with it. It could be half the price, and I still don't know what I'm going to do with it. I don't know. It's going to be pretty, though.
The OLED screens. I mean, I think I said I wasn't buying one, and I think I'm still leaning towards not buying one, but that 11-inch OLED iPad Pro. Don't give me the Magic Keyboard. Don't want the Apple Pencil. Just give me that to watch stuff on the go, and it's a pretty tempting product.
It's definitely tempting, yeah.
But the Vision Pro, for me, has replaced like the around-the-house use case for watching mm-hmm. videos, for the most part. All right, I think that does it for this week. You can find an ad-free version of the show with bonus content, 9to5mac.com/join. This week, we're going to talk about some of my early smart home planning for our new house, and I need some advice, some recommendations. So I guess you can pay me $5 to listen to me ask you for help. That's the value proposition this week. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, where you can leave a rating and a review. Send us feedback, happyhour@9to5mac.com. I'm on Threads, Twitter, Mastodon, @ChanceHMiller. And Mayo, what about you?
Twitter and Threads, BZA Mayo.
All right, thanks, Mayo.
Bye-bye.